grad student? Well, today's the day. Today is the 1 year anniversary of the first episode of this podcast ever going live. I actually literally like waited until the night before this episode is coming out to record this intro because for weeks and months, I have had no idea how to put into words what it means to me that this podcast has existed for a year. A year ago, I was a much lonelier grad student who was unsure of herself, unsure of her future, and scared. And now, you know, I'm still a little bit unsure of myself, and I'm still a little bit unsure of the future, but I am much less lonely, and I am way less scared. And that is because of all of you, and every single guest, and every single patron. In fact, let me thank all of you personally. Thank you to my patrons, Jeremy Gloger, Kara Davidson, Hannah Olson, Jessica Simpson, Katrina Dean, Nicole Lewis, Brianna Williams, Vikram Baliga, Anna Stubbs, Davis Bourne, Hannah Shows, Faith Newsom, Jacqueline Siegel, Ryan Science, Brittany Hockey, William Oda, and Lauren Randall. Oh, and my mom. If you want to join this incredible group of people, you can head on over to patreon.com/deargradstudent and explore all your options. I also want to thank Caden Stockwell for his help with transcripts to this point, and I'm so excited to introduce the full Dear Grad Student team with you very, very soon, when I officially get my shit together. Fall semester's about to start. Cut me some slack. I'm doing my best. I also want to let you know how amazing the last year has been for this podcast. There are 4,500 of you on Twitter, over 1,000 on Instagram, 36 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, and almost 25,000 downloads over the last year. Almost. So close. Please share this with all your friends and cohort. Thanks. Wow. I mean, I genuinely could not have imagined that anyone would have cared about this other than me and, like, maybe my Nana. You are all incredible, and I very seriously mean thank you. I love you all dearly, and I hope that this podcast has made grad school a little bit less scary for you and a little bit less lonely for you, and that you're feeling more sure of yourself and your future. I really hope that for all of you. Now, I wanted this episode to be something special and personal, almost like an episode for me too, you know? So today's episode actually features my partner in crime and boyfriend, Luke. Luke and I have been together for 7 years, and we moved in together when I came to grad school after being long distance for 3.5 years. Like, we met, started dating, immediately long distance, like 8 days later. So it was a big leap. We learned a lot, and I hope that you enjoy this episode really for all of those reasons. So without further ado, let's get started with the 1 year anniversary special of Dear Grad Student. Today's episode is all about romantic relationships, following your partner to grad school, and how to support one another with my loving and much more introverted boyfriend, Luke. Hello, listeners. Welcome to the 1 year anniversary special of your favorite grad school podcast, Dear Grad Student, the podcast where grad students can come together to celebrate, commiserate, and support one another through this long and difficult journey. I'm Alana. I'm a fifth-year doctoral student and your host, and I am joined today by a very, very special guest, the one and only man who pays for my Chipotle and fathers my cat children, Luke the nurse is here. Hi, Luke. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. You know, for this 1 year anniversary special, I just wanted it to be something special. And other than the cats, like, you're the second most special thing to me. We're in the room with the cat that we rescued that we've kind of been, well, I say we. Oh, she didn't like that. That I've been chronicling on Twitter. We're still having a hard time, but we're working on it. So you may hear meows throughout or Luke playing with her. But Luke, why don't you start by just talking a little bit about, like, what do you do for a job? I already said you're a nurse. Tell me a little bit about you. How have you spent the pandemic? And yeah, tell us about Luke.
So I am a recovered substance abuse counselor turned nurse.
God.
So I spent the last year in a nursing school during an accelerated program. and successfully finished, completed my nursing degree and certification, and now I'm working in the Level 1 Trauma Center.
You, like you said, you worked at a drug abuse clinic, like at a methadone clinic. And before that, you worked with dementia care patients. So you've had some really emotionally charged jobs, I feel like. And it's been hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's all a good experience, too. So yeah. When it comes down to it and you're working in an ER, you get a lot of everything. So I feel like dementia and drug abuse are kind of some of the tougher clientele that you're going to get because it's a lot of psych. Broken limbs are a lot easier.
I love that you're like, broken limbs are easier. And I'm literally like, psych is easier. But I also, we talked about this last night, that I do think that you're going to have a farther line for where your burnout is because you've experienced the, like, watching people slowly decline with dementia. You've watched people kind of do the same thing with drug abuse or really quick, sudden, you know, things, all of which happen at the ER. So I feel like you do have, I know you have a lot of experience with your own burnout and a lot of experience with nurturing in the jobs you've been in. And I, not to brag, it does make you a very good partner in this grad school experience. If that's awful to say. It's cute. Thanks.
Very nice.
I'm a nice lady. That's what they tell me. So I thought that it would be nice in order to give people some context. Why don't you tell them a little bit about us? When did you meet me?
Oh, gosh. So 7 years ago, I don't know if your listeners know that.
Full score!
So, yeah, long enough that I've had those discussions.
Those discussions? That's how he's alluding to every time he sees my family. Where's the ring?
Where's the damn ring?
Yes, we met 7 years ago at summer camp.
Even your grandma that hates my guts is like, when are you going to make an honest man, honest woman out of her?
That's what she says. That's right. When are you going to make... This is the same one, though, that I made a comment in on one of my previous episodes about how I was going to use my PhD to, like, wipe my ass. So it just gets better and better as you think about it.
She's a lovely person.
You know what? She really is. People all have different personalities, and everyone ages different. And that's what I research. And on that... Yes, we met 7 years ago at summer camp. We did 3.5 years of long distance where I was finishing up school. Luke graduated college in 2015, and then he worked jobs about an hour and a half away.
The degree I probably could wipe my ass with.
Oh, God. Yeah, it was rec therapy, which is a great field, but doesn't exist where we live now. So that was hard, and we'll get into that. And then when I got into grad school, Luke and I went from long distance to living together. So I wanted to, for this episode, I wanted to do something, especially for people who have been listening since the beginning. And there's one topic that I will never, ever, ever be able to have a grad student on for. In other words, Luke, I need you for this. Swallows. The biggest swallow of water I have ever seen. Anyways, so you're it. Today's episode is all about having a partner or a spouse, not in academia. That's you. I'm the one in academia for those keeping track at home.
I'm glad you can't satisfy this any other way.
It's just you. You're it. But it's going to be about, you know, how you support me, how others can support their spouses. And also, you know, I think that there's something to be said about, I kind of dragged you along here. I mean, you were very, very willing participant in that. But it is also a lot for someone to ask a partner to follow them, you know, leave a city, do whatever. So I think that there's something to be said about, like, I think grad students can be aware of how the bubble that we all live in affects partners. So thanks for being my expert. Thanks for adding a personal touch for such a huge milestone of the podcast. Also, I'm like having a little bit of like, you and I don't have anything just like recorded for memories and like, we'll play this for our kids one day. It's all very cute. So with that, let's start at the very beginning. When I got into grad school and I told you, hey, we're leaving this life that you really like in Columbus with the best group of friends maybe you've ever had, which I don't know if that's true. I'm just saying that now. But we're moving to a state that neither of us ever, 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 ever saw ourselves living in ever. It's not my favorite place I've lived. And it really, it has to do with a lot of things. But I think the biggest thing is it's just so different from where I grew up. Like, not even different bad. It's just so different that, like, I just don't enjoy it.
Well, and we grew up in Cleveland, so I mean, it's a city, but it's a smaller city.
Yeah.
And then when people talk about Lexington in Kentucky, they call it the big city.
Yeah.
And that's insane when half of the population is made up of undergraduate students
yeah.
that aren't there for 4 months out of the year. Yeah. On summer and winter breaks.
And, like, that just kind of reflects, too, just that, like, difference in perspective, right? Because you think about eastern Kentucky and the Appalachian area, some of the most rural and poorest areas of the country, and the fact that, like, I think about the fact that this is the big city to them, I mean, it's just, it's almost like a culture shock, because for me, I'm like, this is one of the smallest places I've ever lived, and it's so small that it's almost claustrophobic, where I'm like, I feel trapped. But at the same time, I mean, Lexington's a city of 300,000 people. I guess less than half are undergrads, but, like, it's not, it's like a small metropolitan city, but it's sprawled and there's not a huge downtown. And so there's a couple of things that make it just very different than where we grew up. And I just dragged you along here and I was like, hey, Luke, we're going to live here for 5+ years. Thanks.
Well, it's interesting because when you think about grad school, it's very, you have to be kind of well off to do grad school in the first place, right? So you have to have the financial stability because you're getting paid crap.
Yeah, we're getting paid crap. That's right.
And so for me to basically just say that I'm able to come along with you is very privileged.
Yeah.
And that was something that I don't think I thought through either.
Mm.
The first couple months not having a job was okay because, I mean, we both had enough savings to get through those first couple months, but I don't know that is something everybody else would be able to do. We went from a summer camp where we made, I think, $2,000 for maybe 3 months or something.
Yeah, maybe.
A pittance, right?
Right.
when I probably should have just stayed in my job at Columbus, saved up some money, and moved. That would be the responsible thing to do. But
looking
again,
back,
privileged. Yeah. Because didn't need to. And then I didn't need to have a job for the first month that I was here. So, I mean, if you're looking at other partners and what to be ready for with grad school, is like, I think we should have done a little bit more planning ahead of time. Basically, we looked for apartment, and that was it.
Yeah, and we did that way early because we knew we were going to camp, and that was definitely an emotional decision on my part of, like, one last hurrah, one last summer to go to camp. And, you know, it was a hard summer for us, and we were doing so many things. It was like we were moving here for the first time, living together, and we were living out of state for the first time. Well, I was. You had gone to school out of state, but, like, independently out of state for the first time. And we probably could have planned better. And I think about that now because we're still not great at planning things all the time. Like, this episode comes out on Monday. Like, we're not always the best, but we always get it done. And I also, I mean, I remember calling you, sitting in the coffee shop when I got in, like when I got the email that I got in, and you were so excited. And then it was like, that was it. Because after that, it was like, holy shit, I'm scared. And it was so valid. But it was like, you didn't find a job despite looking and going in interviews for months.
Well, when you first got in, I was really excited for you, but I was also, we'd come out of a slightly rough patch like 6 months earlier because of long distance, which made it a little bit harder. So it was a big decision to decide to uproot after where we'd been previously, and then moving to Kentucky, and then leaving friends, and leaving, I didn't like my job, but it was a solid job, right? So, again, should have planned things out. That was poor on my part to not look for something ahead of time.
So then what would you say, like, thinking about grad students, especially students who are about to start their first year, who maybe they have a partner joining them, or maybe somebody later in grad school who their partner, like, maybe they're ending long distance and they're, like, joining them halfway through. What kind of advice might you have for grad students? Like, what could I have done better for you that might have made that easier?
I think if you're moving to any city in general, like, there should be something for both parties. Mm-hmm. I think that's easier said than done. But, like, if... So when you finish your doctorate program, or you go into residency?
Nope, you're doing so good,
postdoc.
Honey. Yeah, you go, girl.
Postdoc.
So good. I'm so proud of you.
But when you go to your postdoc, right, so you're going to know generally, what, a few months ahead of time? A year ahead of time? I don't know how much warning you get.
Yeah, no one.
For the record, I'm
isn't.
Completely lost about
Listen,
half of her life.
Luke is doing his best. Well, if you need any information, I do have this podcast you can listen to. But yes, no, postdoc, it really varies. Because with grad school, where it's like, all applications due December 1st. With postdoc, it's literally like, you email someone, and you're like, hey, will you take me? And they might email you back. They might not. They might have funding. They might not. Like, that's a totally, it's very not structured. So I'll do it early, because I'll want to be secure. But, like, yeah, we're not just going to know and then move a month later, probably.
Sure. I mean,
probably.
Well, when you finished up your undergrad, we had a few months? You said April, so
I got
we
in
had that summer.
I got in
so
March.
We probably had 3 months to figure things out. and get an apartment, get set up, tell our families that we're moving another 5 hours
that
away.
That was fun. Like, yeah.
Great times. But yeah, if I was giving suggestions, I would suggest that if the partner doesn't have a job, maybe they should stick with where they are at and do that long distance for a couple months while they're trying to figure out a job.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason I went to nursing school was that when we end up eventually leaving Kentucky and you find a postdoc, I know you might be somewhat limited. Nursing makes it so that I'm not.
Yeah. Look at us planning.
Right.
We planned.
For once, it's like we a few did years ahead of time. But yeah, not everybody has that.
Sorry, the cat just ate his foot. She's like, play with me.
I'm not a sausage. Anyways.
All I want to say is you are a sausage, but I'm not going to say that.
Say hello to your fans.
Anyways. But I think that that's really good advice about, like, I think that there's this pressure that we definitely felt of, like, okay, Alana starts school this day, so we have to move in together, and, like, this is the day. And, like, there also is the bad side of what you suggested, which is, like, if you don't move at the beginning, what's the goal? Like, when are you doing this? So it's, like, yes and no, but if it makes financial sense of, like, I guess the answer is, like, there's no rush.
I think there was a lot of pressure from ourselves and from family members to kind of, like, either commit or get out.
Well, we basically, we almost broke up because I remember I was like really struggling over, like, I knew that you were struggling with coming here. And I was like, I'm going to grad, like, I got into a PhD program. Like, I'm going. And I basically gave you an ultimatum, which is not really how I function at all.
Yeah.
But I said,
probably not the best moment.
Well, but it kind of was because the reason that it was an okay ultimatum in my mind is I basically was like, look, I'm going. You don't have to come. But we've been together 3.5 years in long distance. And I was like, I want to do this. And I'm willing to go all in. But, like, if you don't want to move, I don't want to keep doing long distance. Like, I'll be there for 5 years. You know, like, that's what the future looks like. And then we took some time. And then you called me and you're like, I put in my 2 weeks. And I remember being like, oh, shit. I got me a boyfriend.
Well, I think where the ultimatum is, it can look like a lack of commitment if you're staying behind to, like, find a job in the meantime. But that's it. We were both young.
Yeah.
We didn't need to make it happen right then. It could have taken a few months. I mean, what ended up happening is I followed you over, and then I ended up doing applications all day, getting nobody and playing Call of Duty because I had nothing else going on.
And, like, let's be honest, to do anything else. Being the most depressed you've ever felt.
Yeah. Well, I left a whole lot of good life back in Columbus and didn't have anything else planned for myself. So it was kind of like really proud of you, but at the same point, it pushed me to my breaking point and probably was my least healthy.
And then, you know, you did end up finding a job, which was great. And you worked as a drug abuse counselor. And I've talked.
I also worked as a server, which.
That's right.
I mean, honestly, I think I got as much out of serving as I did a substance abuse counseling.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and the thing that was tough is that you just worked so many hours. I mean, the substance use counseling, you had to be 30 minutes away from home at like 4:30 in the morning. So
also,
that was hard.
Also pushing me out eastern of Lexington.
Yeah.
So, again, talking about culture shock.
Sure.
The further east you go, the more odd it gets.
Yeah.
So, like Appalachian speak.
Yeah. It's totally different.
And language
totally
and terminology
culture.
And, yeah, culture.
Yeah, totally.
So
then once we were here and you had your job, we were kind of adjusting. We always talk about, like, the first year being rough, but what was it like supporting me as your partner in grad school? Like, on the outside looking in, like, what does grad school look like to you? Like, what's your perception of it?
I have
what do I do?
Very limited ideas of what you do. When you left the clinical side to focus more on research.
Yes.
That was confusing as hell to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that he went from something that I don't want to do anyways. I don't like counseling. I didn't like being a substance abuse counselor. That was the closest thing that I could connect with you on. And then you moved even further away and decided you wanted to do research and delve into statistics. And I get bored sometimes when you talk, and that's bad.
But you're honest. Like, I get bored when you talk about nursing sometimes.
Right. So we both have the same thing. We're like, you don't want to hear about the femur break. And
right, we're not
reduction.
Together because of what we do for work.
Right.
Right.
But it's hard for me to understand completely what you're talking about half the time. I think what I can connect with you on is the dynamics of the social groups that go into grad school.
Sure.
You have a mentor for 5 years. You have your lab group consisting of what, like four people, five people?
My cohort. Right now is like three. That's a different lab. Okay. Lab is vertical, cohort is horizontal.
It's never going to sink.
I know. Listen, it's been 5 years. Listen, okay. I'm going to do it for you right now on the podcast. Your cohort are the people that you enter grad school with. Okay. They all have different mentors.
Cool.
People with the same mentor is one lab.
Yeah.
Did you get it?
No. Oh!
Don't be a jackass. You must have understood it. You got it. Tell me you got it.
No.
Maybe, okay, one more time. The people you enter grad school with. Me and sure. Alex yeah, are in totally. A cohort because mm-hmm. we entered in the same year.
Yeah.
We have different mentors.
Sure.
Okay. Don't give me that face. You're giving me such a face. Me and Stephanie.
Yeah.
Same mentor.
Sure.
But we entered different years.
Yes.
But same mentor.
Yes.
Lab.
Sure.
Did you get it?
No.
I'm breaking up with you right now. But anyway, so for you being a partner, and I think everyone knows, academia is a very complicated thing to understand. And it's not that you're not interested in me. You've asked me about things. And certainly when I need support, I think you do a really good job trying to understand where I'm coming from. Hello, cat. Trying to understand where I'm coming from, especially when it's a social thing. Like you said, that's where you can really help. Or like with the mentor thing, that's where you can really help. But what do you feel like have been some helpful things that you have done to support me, like some tangible things that you've actually done? Like, what's helped me feel grounded and better?
Well, you said it in the intro, Chipotle.
And cats.
And cats. Even the reluctant third one.
Well, reluctant for you. Unfortunately, I feel like she came from my womb, but we're working on that.
We're working on it.
We're working on it.
But, I mean, it's the same as supporting anybody outside of grad school, too, right?
You think?
Like, yeah.
Interesting.
This past year has been a little bit different because of COVID and being stuck at home. So supporting you in COVID times is meaning like staying out of your space and not messing with you during like morning and afternoon hours. Yeah. But I mean, I think supporting a partner in general is just related to knowing what is a stress reducer, how to kind of nag each other to be healthy, and also what is good for the soul as opposed to just healthy for the body, like Ooh. Chipotle.
But I think Chipotle is good for the soul and the body, but that's not
at least not my body.
Tell me you're gluten intolerant without telling me you're gluten intolerant.
Or lactose, or both.
Both. It's really fun living here. I think something else from this year that's important to talk about, that this is something I talk a lot about on the podcast, but with COVID, and I think that other people have experienced this for different reasons in grad school, but like mental health things changing. And so I think that my PMDD during COVID has been the worst it's ever been in our whole relationship. And I think that other partners may find that, you know, the person in grad school has more anxiety than they've ever had, or maybe they're really depressed or they have other things going on. And I know that that was, and is, I mean, we're still kind of working it out, even though it's drastically improved with going on medication. But like, I know that has been a huge stressor on you. And I know it's related to COVID, but it also is related to grad school, because anytime I got frustrated about grad school because of it, it unloaded on you.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. It's the same thing as any other job too, though, right? So if I had a bad day at CBH, I would unload that on you. And that led to some bad habits as well on my part.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, and in terms of knowing each other too, I feel like we've learned a lot about our relationship and like what the other person needs. Like, I usually need a hug and you're like, I need space, back up. And I'm like, backing up, don't hug, don't touch, don't hug. And I think that it really speaks to your point about like knowing your partner. What are some, like, can you think of, other than Chipotle, any other pieces, or like, how did you learn what made me feel better?
Communication.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I know it's cheesy, but still, I mean, that's been something that we've both had to work on. We've both talked about how we communicate differently. We both have different manners of speaking. I think the biggest thing with what you needed was seeing what patterns were happening with grad school.
I love that answer.
But like, I mean, you had certain things that were frustrating on repeat. What?
I just, it's so accurate. I feel like you knew about these patterns before I did.
Well, and that's, again, the same thing looking in from somebody else. Like, you knew that my job was ass before I did. Yeah. I knew that you had certain issues with projects in school and whatnot before you did, probably. Yeah. And when, for the 10th time that year, you hear the same rant, it's like, okay, so now you gotta change something, because I'm not gonna listen to this again in a loving way.
Yeah.
But
you know too much. He knows too much.
But it's like, I mean, at a certain point, you gotta confront the other person for their own good to make sure that they're not falling into the same destructive habits. So, yeah. Like, when something is all-consuming and continuing to take up more of your space, I feel like it's really easy in your line of work with research. It can be slightly mundane in a sense where if you're just poking the same research paper, yeah. MOP, you can keep hitting the same wall.
Yeah. So. And I do that for sure. And it's kind of like you kind of have to move things forward. Eventually you'll poke through it. But like, I think that that's really accurate that like it is a repetitive pattern and that partners could pick up on it. But I mean,
well, I think there's a degree of poking that's okay. Yes. Like you can keep doing the same thing for a bit, but then once you've managed to just sufficiently not move anywhere for yeah. 6 months,
right.
a year,
right?
Like I know things take longer yeah. in this kind of program, but there's a point where it's too much.
Yeah.
And either you need to step away and do something else for a bit or just completely move on. Like mm-hmm. you moved on from clinical work for a reason. Like you tried it for a long time.
Yeah.
You liked it periodically, but when after a year, you're continuing to say the same things that are just fundamentally not who you are and not who you want to be as somebody when you're outside of the doctorate program, then yeah, I think that was a good idea to give it up.
Thanks. It was hard.
And I know it was hard because like, and in one sense, you're also giving up some stability because like, yeah. I mean, clinical work is going to be an easier route to find work after school, but not everything's about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously there's been really hard parts. Like you talked about, you got to your breaking point. You had a really hard time finding a job. You left a really happy life. And, you know, like you said, 10 times a year, I'm giving you the same rant on repeat until you, you know, knock me off my head and you're like, hey, maybe.
It sounds bad when you say it that way. No. I had the same things too, though.
Yes.
It's
yes.
not just a one-way street.
Well, this is what I was going to say too, is that have there been any like benefits? Has there been anything that's been nice for you as a partner that has followed somebody to a PhD program? Like cool parts of it or interesting parts or things that other people who are doing the same thing might have to look forward to?
I mean, for one, I'm going to be marrying a doctor.
That's so right. That's cool. You are Mr. Doctor.
I mean, if you just go off the fun of the name, there's
Thank
that.
Thank you so much. Honestly, I feel like that's so validating. Like I'm having like a Dr. Jill Biden moment right now. Thank you for thinking that I'm
Maybe
funny.
I'll join you one day.
That's right. You've thought about getting a doctorate in nursing.
Maybe.
Doctor and doctor.
Can be the doctor nurse that the other actual doctors hate.
Yeah.
Actual doctors, that's really bad.
Medical. The
all the people
like
in
these.
The nursing profession coming for my ass right now. It's not what I meant.
Luckily, I don't have a lot of nurses that follow the podcast, so I think you're safe.
Good. Yeah, don't tell them. But I've seen you grow a lot. I've seen you enjoy a lot of parts of the program. You started out a little naive about... I think you were the smartest one in your class kind of thing at your undergrad or like top three or something like
yeah,
that. Like,
yeah.
you know,
big fish, small pond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You come here and I think the first year was really intimidating and difficult for you. Watch you struggle with like just other people being intelligent, you know, like not that people aren't at
no,
your undergrad, but like you stepped into the ocean instead
right.
of just moving to a bigger pond.
And you know, people use this all the time when they talk about grad school. It's one of those pieces of advice that like every mentor will give you when you move on to grad school is that if you went to a small liberal arts college or a smaller state school, or even if you went to a big state school, you're probably in some part of your department where like you were some shining star, most likely. Or you worked in a lab and you know, you were a kick-ass lab manager and now you go to grad school. Most of us have that experience. Not everybody, but most of us, that is kind of our experience because those kinds of people get into PhD programs, hard workers, conscientious, all that. And so when you go from, wow, you're amazing, wow, this is so great, yes, you should go to grad school, oh my God, I'm not surprised, you're so wonderful, to, well, yeah, you're a grad student. Why can't you do this? Aren't you this? It's so different. And I was also coming out of undergrad, which I talk about a lot. And mm-hmm. like, that
well,
was
you were really young when you're coming into this.
I know.
Like, you
I had
were, what,
just
22?
Turned 22, like a
yeah.
month before.
And like in the grand scheme of things, like that is really young to be starting something so intimidating and long.
And like so influential for my life and career in a way that like for me, I'm like, yeah, I'm just continuing school. And now I'm like, this is the next 40 to 50 years of my life.
And aside from that, also like you take all the home life stuff that was involved in
yeah.
that time of your life. And mm-hmm. like for us when we're moving in general, like it's a lot to deal with as a 22 year old.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because that was the other thing about us moving and you following me is like, all of a sudden I have this college relationship that was very serious for me, is a whole ass adult relationship in my mid-20s, living with a guy for the first time who is following me literally across state lines, you know, to while I do this very adult thing. Meanwhile, you know, my entire Instagram and Snapchat is like my friends still going to block parties for football games and drinking every weekend. And I'm like reading papers while my you know, live-in boyfriend goes to work at 4:30 in the morning, and you look in the mirror and you're like,
3:45.
I'm so sorry. But you look in the mirror and you're like, who am I? What am I doing? And it's horrifying. Like, I suddenly didn't recognize myself. And I've talked to the podcast, especially the episode with Hannah Shows, about like, and maybe you agree or not, but over the last year, I feel like I have figured that out again. And there was a really hard part of COVID, but coming out of that has been a lot more security in myself. And I think a lot more confidence and a lot more willingness to explore who I am, in the sense of like a little bit more with fashion, a little bit more with interests. Like, I'm kind of allowing myself to be nerdy and be like, this is who I am. Figuring out what kind of people I like surrounding myself with, as opposed to like just telling myself they're around me, so they're like, I'm going to be trying to make these people my friends. Like, it's, I don't know. I feel like I've really started coming into my own, and maybe I haven't landed yet, but I'm like, I understand a lot more about how to be the age I am.
And I think that's really fair. I mean, when I first met you, you were still in a sorority, right? And
okay, listen.
Nothing against your sorority people, but you didn't seem to fit in
really
well.
I made no friends. Literally. Literally.
I don't know how many sorority people listen to this, so I mean,
some people have
nice.
Much better experiences.
Right, but again, nothing necessarily against sororities.
My experience was awful.
Yours was horrible, but yeah. I think you were staying there because it was either expected of you. Yeah. They were the people that you thought that should be your friends.
Yes, I was
your
like,
mom was in the sorority. Yes. Like, those aren't good reasons because you weren't enjoying it.
No.
Like,
I was like, no, but if I keep trying, then they'll like me. And it
right, but that
yeah.
is no longer the mindset, which is really nice to see you just hanging out with the people that you want to hang out with.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it shows, like, kind of a level of confidence that I hope has translated back into grad school of, like, realizing my own worth. And so, Luke is barking because I hiccuped, but I took my hiccup out. Before we finish the episode, I do want to go into a little bit of advice. So I want to start with, like, what advice do you have for people who have followed their partner? Maybe they're not listening to this episode because no one's going to be like, let's sit down and listen to my podcast that I like to listen to about grad school. But maybe people can give advice to their partners. So, like, what advice would you give to other partners following their person to grad school?
I mean, to me, it's planning ahead and, like, having an idea of what, like, I think the biggest mistake we made was coming here without
a plan.
Any idea for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I literally just followed you blindly.
Mm-hmm.
We paid for an apartment, and I had rent, utilities, food, all that stuff sucking away at a financial thing that caused financial distress.
Yeah.
Without any kind of solution. Yeah. So,
well,
I mean, and like, you can't, it's like the hierarchy of basic needs, right? So like, mm-hmm. you need to have a house, you need to have food.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that, you need to have money.
Yeah.
And in order to have money, you need to have a job. So we came here without any plan for me. I can't make that money if I
yeah.
don't have any. I like, that's why staying at home
was
in Columbus
so
would have been a better idea,
right?
Prior to like, find a job, then go.
Mm-hmm.
And that shouldn't be looked at as lack of commitment. That should be financial responsibility and
sure.
logical planning.
Yeah. Well, and so it also makes me think too, one thing that we've talked about today is how our lack of plan probably made our first year living together harder than it needed to be. Like, the first year you live somebody, it's already an adjustment. And I was in grad school. And you had no job, right? We had all these things on top of it. And then we had these, like, adjustment years. And then COVID hit. And you quit your job during COVID. You went back to school. And I feel like we're kind of coming out of it. And maybe it took 5 years. But I feel like we kind of have our shit together. Do you agree?
Yeah. So when I'm talking about, like, the financial stuff, I think that for me,
yeah.
as a guy partner, I think that might hit more.
Hmm.
I think a lot of guys tend to focus more on that financial area. So I've seen stuff on early relationships. So, like, guys will be super interested at first, and then when it comes down to their careers, they will focus fully into that.
Hmm.
And their partner will be reasonably upset with how cold they're being. It's not necessarily on purpose. It's just because financial stability is so important.
Yeah.
And it's like, my dad has beat that into me since I was a kid, right? You can't do anything without having that stability.
Right.
So when we first moved here, I think you're usually more of the emotional support and better at like reading emotions, and I'm more of the logical, no, we need to fix X, Y, and Z first.
We really fill our societal roles in a very annoying way, because we're both like, take down the patriarchy, and then we still completely fill in those roles, like, almost absolutely.
But when it comes down to it, when you don't have a job and you can't afford that rent in 3 months and you know that's coming,
yeah,
that eclipses everything else. You can't focus on anything else. And I think that was the biggest mistake we had, because for me, at least, I couldn't focus on us and I couldn't focus on what you were doing at school until that was fixed.
Yeah.
And then once it was fixed, since I didn't have a plan ahead of time, I was working 80 hours a week at times. Yeah. So that negates any time that we have for a good relationship.
And I think that that's a really important point, and really something that I think is good to end off with here, to just remind people, like, grad school is wild, and grad school is this whole world, like, within society. It's like a society within society, and it's hard for people on the outside to understand it, but, like, real life is happening the whole time still. You know, I think that I'm probably bad at this, but, like, I don't get, like, a special pass because I'm having a hard time with grad school. Like, life is still going on. Life is hard for a lot of people. And so, like, when I hear you talk about this now, I have a totally different perception of what my first year was like, because I had a lot less stress on me in the life sense, because I think that I did have a feeling of, like, well, we'll just figure it out. Luke will figure it out. Luke will find a job. And for you, you're literally, like, I couldn't see past the fact that I was freaking out over money. And so I think it's important just to remember, like, you're smiling.
Well no, it's like, I haven't watched a lot of Parks and Rec, but I just remember the first couple episodes, and I don't know names of anybody on the show.
You don't know names of anybody from anything.
But there's the one guy that's in the cast, and his wife is a nurse, I'm pretty sure, and she keeps coming home, and dude is the most self-centered guy ever. He's sitting on the couch, he's asking her to bring him food, he's sitting there playing video games, and that's all I felt like. I was like the bum on the couch playing video games, because, you know, you put in 25 applications this week, like, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
The biggest thing after the financial part is the lack of emotional availability after all of that. Yeah. So I think where we've connected is at least now, I might be in a crap ton of debt after nursing school, but I can at least pay off the debt, and I'm not worried about where my next paycheck is going to come from or how we're going to pay rent. It's just more of a, how many times can we actually go to Chipotle?
So. Which is a much funner game to play.
Yes.
Is funner a word?
No.
Okay. But I do think that it is a good message, too, to say that, like, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, when you have a partner follow you to grad school, it won't always be that hard. Like, it's not always to be a transition. And I think that we're a really good example of this. I mean, we've both talked in the first 2 years we lived here. I mean, there were so many times we could have just called it, because that would have been the easier thing to do, because it was really stressful and overwhelming. We didn't want to, but it was just so much. And I think that when you're in grad school and you're doing something that is, you know, like, propelling you forward in career and life and all of this, it's like you kind of get future thinking on accident, and, like, you don't even mean to be, like, as forward thinking as you are, but, like, everything is about getting to the next step. And, like, it can put a lot of stress on relationships, but we have improved and we're really solid because we've gotten
to a place where we can enjoy the moment a little bit more.
That's really beautiful, honey. I'm not making fun of you. We have.
I mean, again, we made mistakes that made us focus only on that instantaneous moment where we were just trying to make it.
Yeah.
And now we're able to, I mean, I'm going for a daily workout. I don't think I was able to do that for the first couple of years here because I didn't have time for that.
Right.
Or I was too exhausted to get out of bed.
Like, so, emotional, yeah.
Well, emotional and physical.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, because you were working so much. And I mean, I've also learned a lot about myself and the fact that, like, I think it's probably just me, or maybe not a lot of people can relate to this, but being in grad school, I've had to be a little bit selfish, right? Like, I was the one that moved us here. I was the one that was like, I'm uprooting your life. And so I have had to work pretty hard to make sure that, like, when I'm done with school stuff, that I tune into the relationship and I don't assume that that's automatically happening. Like,
well, I think off of that, sorry.
No, go.
But you're asking, like, advice to people that are partners, right? For the first year, I feel like I was kind of supporting you. Well, I also had time, right? I didn't have a job for the first 2-3 months, whatever it was. But I feel like I was able to support you more often during that first time. Like, I was purposefully doing stuff around the house because, like, I'm not leaving the house. I might as well be a good house boyfriend anyways.
House boyfriend!
But, like, that first year, I feel like I was trying to do more around the house. I was trying to take out the garbage, trying to clean and, like, make sure that our place was okay. And after that first year, I think I got overwhelmed by it, and we worked together a little bit to even it out. But you did the same thing for me this past year with nursing, so
yeah, it's a balance.
But that first year is stressful, so
yeah,
for a partner, I think take care of your person for that first year.
Take care of your person.
But seriously, like, yeah. I mean, it's gotta be a culture shock. Huge. I mean,
no matter where you come from,
first off, you're going to a new state.
Yeah,
Kentucky's its own stuff.
New school, new department. New peers, new mentor, new curriculum.
It's just, it's a lot to take in.
Everything is learning.
And kind of recognizing how much it is. And then maybe not taking over everything, but like first few months, maybe the first year, like I think I cooked for you a fair amount.
Yeah.
Like we cleaned, we.
Yeah. And we've kind of picked that back up as we have also adjusted to things. So I think that I really like that message about like what partners can do. And I really like that. I guess I like that I'm also kind of being honest with you that, like, I have certainly, like, let you down at times because I don't tune out of grad school as much as I need to. So I think that would be something that I would say, like, if someone's following you, like, just being attuned to their needs, too. Like, it's not a small feat when somebody, you know, uproots their life to follow somebody else to get a PhD, which is, like, and all, the whole thing is uncertain. You know, someone could get kicked out of a program, someone could get, it would be such a horrible experience they leave, maybe they don't get a job after. I mean, it's really scary for everyone involved. But when you love something and you really want to do it the rest of your life, you kind of take the leap. I guess I'm your leap. Grad school was mine. Is that awful? No, you're my leap too.
Nursing school is my leap.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You just felt like the easy part. Yeah, horrifying. Yeah, yeah.
Terrifying.
Another story for another time. But before we end off this episode, I want to end with final thoughts. Now, these are like takeaways. If you have people listening to the episode, obviously I never talk in a straight line. And people tell me they take notes when they listen, which I think is adorable.
That's
cat.
So nice.
It is so nice. Aww. It's a true story. So I like to leave people with like a couple things to remember. Oh, God. The cat. So what would be your final thoughts? What are your takeaways? What do you want people to remember?
Have a good understanding of your person's rough days, bad days, what separates like good and bad, what's going to be beneficial on those days, and how you can best support or push, and kind of hitting the love languages or the needs of that person. I think that was something that we both struggled with on both sides, but from supporting somebody in grad school, like, I don't understand everything that you're doing, but I can understand how to, like, fix it with food or fix it with...
That's your first suggestion.
It is. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. It's just too...
Okay, so she does a little dance anytime she's fed, and she'll be super upset. You know, have you ever seen those YouTube videos of people... feeding their girlfriend after they've been hangry for the last half an hour, and then they got Taco Bell, and they're doing this little dance.
Oh my God.
Little dance.
And that's me.
Yeah, so yes, food comes first. But recognizing, like, we got really good about, like, going for a walk, or, like, recognizing when that's useful and when it's just stressful.
Sometimes you just give me a cat. You'll just, like, pick it up and hand it to me. That's cute.
That works. Not everybody has access to a cat. If not, find a good squirrel.
Right.
I think it just comes down to knowing what your person needs. So we do cats, we do Chipotle, we do...
Survivor. But like movies. Yeah. Like we got into Marvel for a while. That was really fun.
But I think Survivor is a good example because like...
Why is that a good example, Luke?
Because we've been watching how many seasons?
We're on season 32.
And when did we start?
September, October.
Okay, so for
Luke
some people...
Luke doesn't like it anymore.
For some people, that's okay. But for Luke people, that's tough.
But Luke is a very nice man.
But that's what I'm saying. So, like, you love Survivor.
I like ending my day off with reality TV. I like watching... It's not a trash show. There's some reality TV that's a trash show.
Survivor's not trash.
No.
But it's a good relaxation technique.
I mean, you just, like, escape from it. Like, it's not a TV show I have to think hard about. It's kind of just, like, pure entertainment. I like watching human behavior. It's, like, fun.
It is fun.
It's dramatic, and I like the drama.
And I think the point is you're asking for advice. Like, that's one of your ways to relax.
Yeah.
So. And it's not necessarily for me, but
right, if you're that's the point of, like, you're kind of tired of it, and so I've been trying to work on, like, let's watch something else tonight. We'll, like, try to sporadically put that through the week. I'm not great at it, but I at least suggest it more often, and then you'll just kind of be like, it's okay. So, you know, knowing what your partner needs, don't bother the cat.
I just want her to be in the episode.
I think that those are really good final thoughts. Also, I gotta be honest, I feel like this conversation with you is actually really nice because we've talked about these things, like, I don't know, sometimes we'll be at a bar and I'll be having, like, a sentimental moment of, like, wow, like, we feel so good right now and wow, we've been through so much and blah, blah. But just, like, talking about our whole journey and hearing your side of it in this way has actually been really cool for me to hear. So this has been really fun, and I'm really glad that we've kind of captured this conversation because, I mean, we're really talking about some of the hardest times of our whole relationship and talking about how we learned about each other and came out of it. I mean, it's, like, kind of beautiful, I'm not going to lie, but I'm not going to get sappy.
We're like little butterflies.
What?
In our own cocoon.
Okay.
We have emerged.
Oh. Thank you so much, Luke, for your input. I'm going to give my final thoughts. I think that my final thoughts, I really like what you said about knowing what your person needs and, like, helping support your person. So I think that speaking to other grad students, just realizing, like, if you do have somebody who follows you, or if you meet somebody while you're in grad school and then they become part of this world, you know, that is significant. And people, just like we need support, other people do too. And it can be really hard when grad school can feel like our life and we're working on boundaries to separate that, to feel like, let me make sure I'm tuning into real life. Let me make sure I'm, you know, taking time away from email, taking time away from projects and spending time with this person I love. And this can go for friends as well. Like, if you have a best friend, you need to make sure you're reconnecting with them, or a partner or a spouse. Not that we're relationship experts by any means, but I just think a lot about, like, I am extremely grateful for our relationship in grad school, because despite the difficulties we've had, you've really been an anchor. And I do think it's a privilege to have that kind of person in person supporting you, living with you in grad school. So I want to thank you for being there through my stressors and all of that and getting me Chipotle and all those things, because I think it's made me be able to do this. I don't think I would have been able to move here financially, deal with it all emotionally, or, like, even be okay physically. And so you're a huge asset. And so I just want to say thank you.
Well, thanks.
That's sweet. You're welcome. Thanks. I'm sweet. You heard it here first, folks. Well, Luke, anything else you wanted to say before we head out for today? Just, like, I don't know. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Do you have anything to say to the listeners?
Stick with two cats. Don't get a third one.
Oh, gosh.
The third one's always mean.
Oh, she's not. She's just nervous.
She's trying to eat my beans.
Oh, my God. Don't talk about your beans on my podcast. Well, Luke, thank you for the millionth time for being a guest and being my boyfriend. Listeners, thank you for continuing to listen to the podcast that I released 1 year ago during quarantine. Ow! The cat's biting my ankle. I'll talk to you next week. Hashtag bye. Ow! Fuck. Why? Can connect with Dear Grad Student on Twitter at Dear Grad Student, on Instagram at Dear Grad Student Pod, and on Facebook at Dear Grad Student. Everything that you need for the podcast can be found on the podcast website at deargradstudent.com. If you're looking for merch, you can go to the website, click merch in the menu at the top, or look me up on Redbubble. If you just want to listen to me ramble online, you can find me on Twitter at Alana_Gloger. That's ELANA_GLOGER. And of course, everything for this podcast is made possible by the amazing podcast patrons. If you want to help out, you can join them at patreon.com/deargradstudent for $1, $3, $5, or $10 a month. If you want to help out the podcast in other ways, you can leave a review. Best place for that is Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Google Podcasts. Be sure that you are following Dear Grad Student on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you find your other favorite shows to be sure that you are notified when each episode goes live. As a reminder, all resources and links mentioned in today's episode can be found in the description. And until next time, warmest regards, best wishes, sincerely, Alana.